From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, the work of Edgar Cayce, the great American prophet. Here's what's happening. A large asteroid is about to fly past planet Earth in a few days. It is a mountain-sized space rock. It's not going to hit us. They say it's three times further away from us than the moon. Just want you to know what's out there. Groundbreaking for single-family homes racing to the highest level in more than 6.5 years in December, and permits are surging. It's a hopeful sign for a sluggish housing market recovery. Let's check in with the investment advisor, Mish Shedlock, on this one. Well, that's a little bit good news, Mish. We've been talking about some good news lately with you.
We have. Housing was up this year, but it's compared to December, so we have to do these seasonal adjustments. But bear in mind, in November of 2013, you know, just over a year ago, we had a housing starts were 1.1 million. And analysts then said, my gosh, look at this. We've got this year-end surge. That happened to be the highest number for an entire year. In fact, November of 2013 beat every number, every month in 2014. So now, for whatever reason, we're seeing a surge in December on housing. And I don't know, I'm looking at real wages declined in wages went down in December. There were a lot of corporate announcements, eBay, McDonald's, a bunch of corporations are announcing layoffs. Let's just, it's good news, George, but let's not get too excited yet.
And also, I wanted to ask you about what's been going on with the Swiss franc and all those kinds of currencies. Any effect on us?
My gosh, George, yes. FXCM required, that's a brokerage house here in the United States, its share price plunged 90%. And listen to this, George. It asked for and got approval for 50 times leverage. And they said, well, if we don't give this leverage to our clients, no one will trade to us. So they granted FXCM 50 times leverage. People loaded into bets on the Swiss franc, and they required a $300 million bayout. The stock plunged 90%. Another bankruptcy in the wake of that Swiss franc move happened, announcement just today. A hedge fund, $800 million, all of it was drained. Gone. Poof. Just like that on the Swiss franc. And today, the Canadian National Bank surprised everyone. They cut interest rates unexpectedly. A lot of unexpected here news by central banks, something we've not seen lately, George. And the yield curve inverted in Canada every month. And by that, I mean interest rates 1 month are actually higher than they are for 1 year, for 2 years, and for 3 years. That tells me that a recession is coming to our friends up north in Canada, and they're our largest trading partner, George. If Canada hits a recession, it's going to be some spillover here to the United States. So there's a lot of things happening, a big announcement by the ECB tomorrow. I expect some volatility around that one, George.
All right, Mish, thanks so much. In Middletown, New York, a Middletown man has been arrested, accused of demolishing a house that he does not own without getting the proper permits and without calling in utility companies to stop gas and electric service before the demolition. Police say the 48-year-old man who lived at the house, he's accused of demolishing it, has been charged with second-degree criminal mischief, a felony, and he might face even more charges. The 840-foot square foot house, three-bedroom ranch, now a pile of rubble sitting on a debris-strewn lot. Nobody knows why he did that. The FBI's investigation into the shooting death of an unarmed black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri, here last summer is complete, and it's unlikely to result in civil rights charges against the white police officer involved in that case. In August, Darren Wilson shot Michael Brown, the 18-year-old, following a scuffle. The incident touched off nationwide protests and debates about police force against minorities, especially after a grand jury in November declined to indict Wilson in the case, for not having enough evidence there to remand him to trial. The Justice Department is to pay a woman $134,000 after making a fake Facebook page that contained a photograph of her half-clothes. She had sued the government after it suggested that she had implicitly consented to the creation of a page using her identity, since she had previously granted officers access to her mobile phone. The Department of Justice has now settled that dispute, but has not admitted any wrongdoing. Apparently, they wanted to go after her boyfriend in some kind of drug deal and set up the fake Facebook page to try to catch him. I don't know how that would work. At least 50 U.S. law enforcement agencies have secretly equipped their officers with radar devices that allow them to peer through the walls of houses to see whether anyone is inside, a practice raising new concerns about the extent of government surveillance. Let's check in with the private investigator who looks at all kinds of electronic countermeasures, Roger Tulsis. Roger, good or bad for police officers? Good or bad for us?
Oh, bad for us, George. You know, Big Brother's working 24/7 on us. And here's another device. You know, you and I just talked about the cell intercept system that was covert. Well, apparently they've been using these things for 2 years. At least I've known about it for 2 years. But it made USA Today on the 19th, the title being New Police Radars Can See Inside Homes. And this is a handheld device called a Range R, made by L3 Communications. It's a handheld device. The police sneak up to the front wall of your house, they stick it on, and they're able to watch the movement of individuals, detect individuals' movement. And of course, you know, this is just mission creep, because 2 years from now, there could be drones flying over our house, hovering, doing the same thing. So the question is whether the courts are going to put a stop to it. You know, the Fourth Amendment specifically says the right of the people to be secure in their homes.
You were months ahead when you said on this program about these fake cell phone towers. Months ahead, yeah. Roger.
Well, you know, we're now finally having some discussion in the government about whether they're going to allow it to continue. But, you know, we have made no headway since the Patriot Act. It's a complete abomination of all our rights.
Roger, thank you so much. So, at a little law enforcement office near you, they might be peering into your house. In Russia, two performance artists were arrested after pouring holy water on the Red Square tomb of Soviet leader Vladimir Lenin and shouting, "Rise and be gone." They went after them. Vaccines, we've talked about them, haven't we? And in a moment, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny joins us, saying no to vaccines. We're going to talk about what the latest is with her and why is Australia so upset with her. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. This hour, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny with us. She is an osteopathic medical doctor, board certified on three specialties. She is the founder of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center as well, a holistic center in Cleveland, Ohio. Also a noted author, couple books, Fowl, Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think, and Saying No to Vaccines. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, back on Coast to Coast. Sherry, lots going on these days. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, George. Thank you so much. And yeah, it's been a busy few weeks.
Hey, what's going on in Australia? I mean, you're supposed to be there for lectures in March, but man, they're sending out some really tough, venomous words about you.
Yeah, it all started last summer when I made a decision that I was going to go to Australia for a holiday. And then I met Stephanie Messenger, who's a person from Australia. And she does a lot of things with educating people about problems associated with vaccines. And she said, well, if you're coming to Australia, why don't we set up some speaking venues for you? And while you're there, you can meet a few people. And I'm sure they'd like to meet you. And let's just set up some things where you can talk. And that started in probably June of last year. And so she's been making all the arrangements. I was to go there as an invited guest to speak. We were going to speak in Melbourne, Sydney, Gold Coast, Brisbane, and Adelaide. And she was making all of the arrangements. And on January the 4th, the Daily Mail in Australia sent out a huge piece saying that I was a international public health hazard, and that I should not be allowed in their country to spew untruths about the safety and efficacy of vaccines. And from there, it's been every day since that time. It's been radio and television. I've been on the Today Show in Australia, beamed in by satellite, once, and I'm going again tomorrow, responding to a lot of the calls from journalists down there who've written print articles about me. And I told one of the first radio interviews that I did, I told the host, he asked me if I was surprised by the big blowback that had happened with the Australian media. And I said, yes, I was very surprised because I thought I would come into the country, speak at those places, mm-hmm. probably have 200 or 300 people per venue, meet some new friends, enjoy a holiday, get quietly back on an airplane and fly home.
Have
and
a good time even, down under.
Yeah, and who would have even known I was there? But a couple, you know, maybe 1,200 people kind of speak into the choir, and you people have made it into an international incident, which they have.
Well, indeed. Now, have you generated any support down under?
Oh, my goodness, lots of support. In fact, I think that this is a rather small group of extremists who are against free speech, and that they are also not only against free speech, but they're against free hearing. They do not want the people there to hear that there may be another side to the story that they're not being told. But the support that's come out of Australia and out of the UK and Canada and all of these other countries and even across the US has just been immense, saying, what's wrong with those people? You are here to just tell them some information. And I've had a couple of people on my Facebook page. One said, Dr. Tenpenny, you've won already. You've got millions of more people that are raising up their head and saying, what? I should be asking about vaccines and looking at you and saying, what's the big hullabaloo? What are they making all this noise about? And that more and more people are now becoming aware that there's something that they should be asking questions about before I've even taken a 23-hour flight to get there.
So the CDC has said, hey, this vaccine that's out here for the flu this year, well, it's probably not going to work. What do we do about this?
Well, not only is it not working this year, it just doesn't work any years. I mean, I don't know how many more studies that they have to do to show that flu shots don't work. I mean, the Cochrane Collaboration, the international think tank out of Rome, has done at least 4, maybe 5 large studies in all age groups, babies, children, middle-aged adults, and senior citizens, saying that getting a flu shot is no more effective to keep you from getting the flu than a shot of sterile water. And there was an article that came out just yesterday in Canada that said that it's not working, none of these flu shots work. In fact, it was the Toronto Director of Infection Control that said, quote, we've hyped this vaccine so much that we've begun to believe our own hype. And so we need to know that the flu shot has never really worked. We just happen to have a more virulent type of strain that happens to be around that really is making a lot of people sick. But it's interesting to me that even though it doesn't match the flu vaccine, we're past the vaccination season, we have a lot of people sick, but the CDC is still telling people to go get their flu shot.
Yeah, Sherry, I don't take the flu vaccine, and I don't tell people to take it or not to. I'm not qualified to say that. You are. It's a tough call for people, isn't it?
I think if people really understood and did some basic research, just doing something as simple as looking at the package insert and seeing what's in there and seeing the stray viruses and seeing the formaldehyde and the and seeing the 2-phenoxyethanol and the different types of ingredients that are in a flu shot, and the multi-dose flu shots still have mercury in them, and then looking around a little bit and going to our vaccine research library, the vaccineresearchlibrary.com, we have so much information posted there for free under the Scream of the Week about all the problems with the flu shot and that they don't work. And people have come to believe, like this director from Canada said, we've been indoctrinated to believe that flu shots protect you, they're good for you. In fact, they're like a B12 shot. You better go get one.
Sherry, so let's take a look at what's going on in the school systems these days. Can a parent actually say to a school system, we're not going to get vaccinated? We're not going to get the vaccinations?
Well, in the United States, all 50 states have an exemption policy. West Virginia and Mississippi only have a medical exemption, and it's very hard to get, and there's not much that they can do in those two states, and that's West Virginia and Mississippi. There are 19 states that have what's called a philosophical exemption, which means you've looked at the risk of the vaccine versus the risk of the disease, and you say, gee, I've looked at what's in the vaccine, I've looked at the decrease in the incidence of the infection, and I think that there's a lot of other things that I can do to keep myself and my children healthy rather than being injected with this solution, and so therefore, I'm going to declare my philosophical exemption and declare my right to refuse. Now, there are 19 states in the U.S. that applies. All the rest of the states, the other 48 states, have a religious exemption, which means that you have decided that you don't want these toxic things injected into your body, and you believe that God's going to do a better job, and you're going to do a better job of keeping you healthy. Now, some states are more difficult to get a religious exemption than others, but 48 out of the 50 states have them. And in Australia, it's my understanding that they don't even have to go through that exemption problem. They can just refuse to vaccinate if they want to. And if they want to get a formal exemption, it has something to do with their tax laws, they can do that. And I believe that that's one of the reasons that they are concerned about someone coming down and telling the rest of the story and the truth and to ask questions, because they're concerned that too many people will start asking questions.
Sherry, lots of concern and controversy over vaccines and the possibility that they develop autism in children. Where do you stand on that? Some people are saying that the people who have discovered this, they're quacks and they're off base. What's Sherry Tenpenny say?
Well, we know for sure that the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program here in the U.S. has adjudicated cases and awarded damages for autism. Now, the Hannah Poling case a few years ago was one of the most visible, but there are at least 12 that are sealed cases that we know that they were awarded. And autism is just the most extreme form of vaccine injury. And even when you look at the package inserts, they will talk about something called encephalopathy. And encephalopathy is brain inflammation, and it's listed as a possible side effect on most of the vaccines. So we know that brain injury can occur, but autism is on a sliding scale of vaccine injury. It's at the continuum at the far end. And before that, we have things like asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, and a very long list of neurological disorders. So it's not true that vaccines are just safe, effective, they protect you, and they're harmless, which we have been indoctrinated to believe.
Sherry, since you've been doing this, and you've been doing this for a long, long time, and you're one of the world experts, 14 years, what started you on this path, this mission?
Well, I got a brochure in the mail. It was in September of 2000 to attend the National Vaccine Information Center's meeting. For some reason, that brochure sat on my countertop for a very long time, and I had a difficulty throwing it away, and I even went so far as to call them to say, I don't know that it's so convenient for me to come at this time. When is your next meeting? And they said, well, we're kind of a small nonprofit. We don't know if we'll ever do another one. So I thought, well, there's something that's calling me to go to this meeting. Maybe I should go. So when I went to the meeting and I sat through 4 days of listening to doctors, medical doctors, PhD researchers, parents, parent advocates, teachers talk about all of this damage and carnage that was being done with these vaccines, I just sat there just mesmerized. And I thought, how did I possibly miss this? I grew up in a chiropractic family. I was not vaccinated when I was a kid. I had measles, mumps, rubella, chicken pox, pertussis. So did all my cousins, and nobody thought anything of it. I've been in medicine now for all of these years. I was the director of an emergency department for 12 years and doing emergency medicine. I've been doing integrative medicine for about 6 years at that time. How did I miss this? And I came home and I started investigating. I thought, well, I'll start with the CDC documents. I'll go there and start reading them. And as I started reading them, I thought, is this it? Is this really what this entire industry is based on? And then I read another paper and another and read the Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal papers and JAMA and New England Journal of Medicine and et cetera. And one thing just led to another and to another, and I thought, there is another whole story here that people don't know about, that people are just told, take this vaccine. Doctors are not trained in this. When we go to medical school, we're never taught about this. We're just taught that the smallpox vaccine came along and eradicated smallpox, and you know we're doing the same thing with polio, and we just believed it lock, stock, and barrel, and we never looked at the history of what that was all about. And each vaccine that has come along, we're just said, well, it's good, we need to take it. And my position is that people need to have a fully informed position before they make a decision on what's going to be injected into their children or into their own bodies.
In your opinion, are there any vaccines out there that work?
Well, I don't know that I would say, do they work? I mean, by definition, if you inject something into your body and you develop an antibody, then by the research standards, they would say, yes, that works. The big question is, George, and that we don't know and is nothing really published about it, is does the effect, just because you have an antibody to this vaccine, does that protect you and keep you from getting sick? And therein lies the rub.
All right, Sherry, stay with us. We're going to come back. We're going to take some questions from concerned Coast to Coast listeners about vaccines next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny with us. We'll take your phone calls, questions for Dr. Tenpenny, or perhaps you might want to share a story or two with us. Sherry, I do get a lot of reports and stories from people that they go out and get a vaccine and then they get sick. Something happens to them. High fever, you name it. What's causing that?
It's a complete disruption in the immune system, George. I mean, we're injecting things through the skin into the body that's then taken up and absorbed by the bloodstream. That is a foreign thing that's not supposed to be there. And whether it's a virus, a chemical, a heavy metal, the body goes, whoa, we need to get rid of this. And what is the way that the body gets rid of foreign things that do not belong in your blood is they send out these messenger molecules and stimulate the white blood cells to come alive, and all of that is propagated by fever. So it's a foreign matter being injected into the body. It's not the normal way that you would ever get sick, and it's not anything that's natural.
Well, it's not anything that's natural. When they first developed these vaccines, that was their approach. How come over the years, with everything else that's advanced technologically, we haven't really made vaccines better?
You know, that's a really great question, and I could say that about a lot of things in healthcare, that medicine, why is it that we still use chemotherapy 200 years later? Couldn't we have come up with some better way to kill off cancer cells? And couldn't we have come up with some better way to engage the immune system to keep us from being sick and preventing these things from getting into our system? And I believe that we have an immune system that's really healthy if we take care of our bodies and we eat right and get plenty of vitamin D and wash our hands and try to do things that keep ourselves healthy. Now, I know that a lot of people would say, well, what about the people who are chronically sick or have underlying things like, say, cystic fibrosis or muscular dystrophy, that they are born with a genetic problem that they don't have in a necessarily very intact immune system. Well, the problem with injecting them with all of these vaccines is that we are taking a body that's already compromised and we are injecting things that to make it more compromised without any assurances that by injecting these vaccines it's going to keep them from getting sick. And when the original vaccine trials are done on any of the vaccines that are already on the market or the 220 that are in the pipeline, that what they do is they test these vaccines on completely healthy adults and children, that they're screened out for underlying problems and if they're on medications or they have any other types of problems. And when they do these studies on completely healthy people and then decide that they're going to approve the vaccine for general use, then immediately what we do is we push them on sick people, and they've never even been tested on those people.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. Tim is in St. Mary's, Georgia, east of the Rockies, to get things going for us. Tim, you're on with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Go ahead.
Hi, George. We love your show over here in Georgia. We actually have a coast-to-coast radio listening club. I'd like to say hello to all our listeners out there.
Hello there.
I'd like to ask the doctor about the Pneumovax vaccine for people who don't have spleens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a spleen, and I get it once every 5 years, and I've never had any problems, and it seems to work. I was wondering what your advice on that was.
Well, the Pneumovax is the adult pneumococcal vaccine, and when that vaccine first came out, it was recommended that you could get it once in a lifetime, and that would be good enough. And then it went to every 10 years, and now in some populations it's every 5, and sometimes they say it's every 2. So it's, again, it's a false immunity. Antibody, it injects 21 different strains of strep into your system for which you develop antibodies because those are the most common ones, and it's supposed to keep you from getting sick. And I would say that in some people it does, just like with other vaccines. Sometimes people don't get sick when they've had the shot, and sometimes they get sick anyways. And so it's another one of those things where we increase antibodies in the system without any real assurances that it's going to keep you from getting sick. And some of these things get woven into the standard of care, and they never get questioned. So that's just the way that vaccine is.
Tim, thank you. What do you think of Tamiflu, that medicine for people who come down with the flu?
It doesn't work. It really doesn't. In fact, I wrote a whole chapter in that in my book called Foul Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think. And that the title of the chapter was called The Scam of Tamiflu. And there's been lots of studies in the mainstream journals saying that it really isn't effective. And the main reason it's not effective is that in order for it to work, you have to take it within the first 2 days of a laboratory-confirmed case of influenza. Because 86% of the time, when you get flu-like symptoms, it's not caused by an influenza virus. It's caused by some other virus, like adenoviruses or Coxsackie or other types of things. 86% of the time, I actually did the analysis on the CDC data over a 10-year period of time to come up with that number. So most of the time when you first get sick with the flu, most people don't immediately run to the doctor. Second of all, rarely does the doctor swab your nasal passages and test to see if it actually is influenza. Thirdly, even if they do, it can take more than 2 days to get the results back. And by that time, you're past the window of taking Tamiflu and it working for you anyways. And even when they have done it in those very close windows, what they've said is that it shortens the flu-like symptoms by about 1.5 days.
Okay, next up we go to Karen in Bakersfield, California, first-time caller. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Actually, I'm a third-time caller, but I didn't have another line to call.
Oh, we shall punish you. Go ahead.
It's most fortuitous that this program is being aired right now because I've been dealing with a recent vaccination for tetanus, a booster that I had. And unbeknownst to me, until I got the paperwork afterward, I was also given diphtheria and acellular pertussis. And I've always refused any other vaccinations, even influenza or this pneumococcal. And I am asking the doctor, what might be the possible consequences, side effects of that?
Well,
I didn't authorize it, but the nurse who gave it lied to me when I asked him.
Well, that's an interesting scenario just in and of itself.
Sure is.
It's very interesting. I mean, there's three forms of the tetanus vaccine. One is tetanus toxoid, one is tetanus DT, which has tetanus and diphtheria in it, and then the third type is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis together, or the DTaP. They're giving that more and more now to adults because they know that the pertussis vaccine is not working. Unequivocally, it's been reported, it's been talked about in the journals for probably 10 years now. And they're a little bit at a quandary of trying to understand why that is. Why is the pertussis vaccine not working and we're seeing more outbreaks of pertussis, even in fully vaccinated children? Is it because the bacteria itself has changed? The efficacy of the vaccine has changed? Has the composition of the vaccine changed? They don't really know. So they are routinely now giving the DTaP instead of just a tetanus vaccine. And routine tetanus vaccines that have always been in the medical armamentarium to get one every 10 years, really people should get tested, should get a blood test, get a tetanus titer test to see even if they need it, because they've shown in the medical literature that when you hyperimmunize, if you have way too much tetanus antibodies on board, that's when you're more likely to have side effects and complications.
Sherry, you provide a great service for a lot of people. And so I trust when you get to Australia, everything will work out for you.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know what's going to happen because they're calling for them to revoke my visa, so I can't come to Australia. And I don't
revoke
know
revoke your visa.
Revoke my visa. Yeah, There's an online campaign, and these very militant extremists down there are wanting to have the government revoke my visa. They've already talked about organizing and picketing the venues. Organizers down there said that they have already intimated that there would be bomb threats, just simply so that we would have to evacuate the buildings and disrupt the entire meetings. Stephanie told me that one venue had said that if she ended up booking it there, that she would have to take personal responsibility for anything that happened to the building that day, even if it had absolutely nothing to do with our meeting. And I'm concerned about the parents that are going to come with children and that they might be there. And so I'm not sure how this is all going to shake out. I'm hoping that I can perhaps still go there as a vacation and not speak, but they're trying to get the head of the public health person there to revoke my visa because they should not allow me in the country.
Who are the vocal people? Are they big pharma folks? Who are they?
Well, there's a big, very big pro-vaccine lobby down there. There's an organization called the Skeptics, and they've set up shop down there, and they are the ones who come after people all over the world who say anything about vaccines or say anything non-pharmaceutical-based. I mean, if you say anything about a vitamin or a supplement or homeopathy or some other way to stay healthy, I mean, they set up these vile attacks. It's my understanding that the public health department is very much entwined with these pro-vaccine people there, and they're just bullies.
Jeez.
And it's amazing to me, out of a country of 23 million people, that a handful of people can have that much power.
There's one thing about having good, honest debate with you. There's another thing, harassing you and threatening you.
Yes, it is. And it's been an interesting media experience, George. I mean, you know, I've been doing radio with you and with other radio venues and television venues for a very long time. And this has been very different to read all these vile accusations of things, of people putting things in print that really aren't true, and just to read these things. But I also understand that, and I know you've probably experienced this in your life, that if you're going to be a public persona, not everybody's going to love you.
No, you got to take the good and the bad. You know, hopefully most of it's good.
I know. I've said that this has been an experience in how to grow thick skin.
Let's go to Sean in Salt Lake City, Utah, west of the Rockies. Hello, Sean. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. By the way, I think that's awful what they're doing, canceling your events and stuff. I feel like if they don't like what you have to say, they don't need to go to your events. They don't have to listen. But anyways, I've listened to you for a while, and especially during the flu vaccine, I refused to get that. However, I had cancer several years ago, and had some issues where I put an IC with my lungs. They are stronger now. They're really not necessarily all that weak. However, sometimes I'll get pneumonia, maybe like a couple times, two or three times a year, which I know isn't that great, but my doctors are pressing me. They know how I feel about vaccines, but they are pressing me for the pneumonia one. So my question is specifically, I guess side effects on that, but also, is it worth it? Does it work, basically, in your opinion on that?
So just so I'm clear, you want to know the side effects of the flu shot and whether the flu shot works? Is that the question?
No, sorry, not the flu shot, pneumonia vaccine, I guess. That's what they're pushing me to get.
Well, like I explained to the caller earlier, you get an antibody, but it doesn't guarantee that you're not going to get sick. I would ask your doctors what other types of things can they do to keep you healthy and well, other than injecting something that has 23 vaccine antigens in it and a large amount of phenol that is not so good for your whole system overall. We usually promote people to get their vitamin D levels checked. And when you get your vitamin D level checked, or your a lot more doctors are doing that test these days, everyone should ask what their number is. I mean, what is my level? Because the normal range on a blood test, the normal range for a vitamin D level, a 25 hydroxy vitamin D level, the normal range is 30 to 100. And if your level comes back 31, your doctor may say, well, it's in the normal range. However, it's been shown, again, published in the medical literature, that in order for the vitamin D level to keep you healthy and avoid flus and cut down your incidence of cancer and a long list of other things that vitamin D does for you, your immune system, your hormones, etc., that level needs to be between 80 and 100.
Wow, on the high side then. And is that vitamin D3 you're talking about?
Okay. It is, George. It absolutely is. And lots of vitamin C. Vitamin C ascorbates have been shown to boost up your white blood cells and to protect you naturally. Elderberry extract, echinacea. I mean, there's lots of things that you can do that can support your immune system, because I maintain that health does not come through a needle, meaning that the vaccination does not support your health. It just is a chemical that's injected that's supposed to do something that we've come to believe is true.
Let's go to Jim in Columbia, Missouri. We've got time for one or two more calls. Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, have you ever heard of polio or smallpox? And if vaccinations don't work, then why is smallpox extinct? And why does polio only persist in areas where groups like Boko Haram or the Taliban forbid vaccinations? And I think you're doing a huge disservice to the world having someone on saying that vaccinations don't work. Vaccinations do work.
Go ahead, Sherry.
Well, it's interesting that you should bring up the whole thing about smallpox, because I'm putting together a 7-part series right now on the smallpox vaccine, and Dr. Suzanne Humphrey, called Dissolving Illusions About Smallpox and Polio, really do point out that smallpox and polio went away because of hygiene, public health, clean water, refrigeration, sanitation, and changing of the laws in terms of taking care of the poor all over the world, and that the smallpox vaccine really did not eradicate smallpox. In fact, it did an awful lot of things of spreading other diseases, particularly syphilis, all over the world, and that the polio was well on its way out before the vaccine even came into play, and that's pretty well documented in public health literature and by lots of graphs. So these are two other of the vaccination myths that we have propagated for 200 years, that the smallpox vaccine eradicated smallpox, the polio vaccine eradicated polio. When you dig a little deeper, you find there's another page 2 rest of the story.
There's another story that came out about the HIV virus, that it is almost making itself extinct on its own. Did you see that story?
I did not, but that would not surprise me, because that was when I was at the CDC meeting in 2001, when they were talking, was right after 9/11, and they were talking about reactivating the smallpox vaccination. One of the speakers there was Dr. Tom Mack, and Dr. Tom Mack was a CDC employee, had been involved in a lot of smallpox eradication campaigns around the world. And one of the things he said was that the viruses burn themselves out. They become weaker over time by just a circulation in the environment, and that the smallpox vaccine or the smallpox virus was about to go away on its own. So the same thing could play true with what you just said about the HIV virus, that perhaps by recycling over a period of time, it's becoming weaker and will burn itself out.
All right, Sherry, thanks for being on the program. Your website, please, would you give it out?
Yeah, the website is drtenpenny.com. We're launching a new website after February 1st, so please come back and visit. It's drtenpenny.com and vaccinereserchlibrary.com. And please join us on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, and it's Dr. Tenpenny on Vaccines.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. Appreciate it. And again, we don't tell you to go out and get a vaccine. We don't tell you not to. You make up your own mind. We're just trying to bring you tidbits of information, and that's what we do. Up next, we talk about the late, great American prophet, Edgar Cayce.